When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink. I'm here to help you make smart choices about your financial life. But first, here's my Glinkonomics report. So I told my producer, Ben, that I wanted to talk today about GDP and retail numbers and the fact that it's been looking a lot like Christmas for the past few weeks, well in advance to when we normally would see Christmas. And I think I took him a little by surprise because he was under the impression that third quarter numbers were actually lagging in those areas, and they are. I grant you, some of the overall figures are unimpressive or even a little unnerving. But if you look deeper, there's been a groundswell in the GDP and retail sales numbers, and it could be a good sign for the economy long term. And what we always say is what's good for the economy is good for housing, right? The Census Bureau's retail numbers report for September only showed a 0.1% increase from August, but still up 2.3% from the year before. Gas prices have declined 3.2%. In fact, in some places around the country, shockingly enough, people are paying under $2 a gallon for gas. And that was a big factor in why the monthly number had gone lower. And it masked some other strengths in furniture and auto sales. If you look at GDP, the new report coming out from the Commerce Department didn't seem so promising on its face. The economy grew 1.5%. That was a huge slowdown from the 3.9% GDP growth we saw in the second quarter. Consumer spending still managed to grow at 3.2%. That was also down slightly from the second quarter, but it's not a bad number. There were some metrics that looked stronger than they did in the second quarter. They're pointing to a stronger labor market, which is what we need, although that in itself, labor is still not where we need it to be. But let's take that apart. Personal income rose $32 billion more than in the second quarter. There was a slight acceleration in wages and salaries. Some of that is still due to the rise in the minimum wage that we're seeing go into effect in some parts of the country. Disposable personal income ballooned by 4.8% in the third quarter compared with 3.4% in the second. That number's a good number, and it pushed the personal savings rate to 4.7%. That's up 0.1%. Now, a lot of economists say that they don't even want to see personal savings rates that high because that means that people aren't actually borrowing money. But if you look at the number of people who are borrowing, we see that they are opening up more credit card accounts but borrowing less on them. So those numbers do jive, but it may not be the kind of push the economy needs. Having spent the last few shows listing shortcomings in the labor market and the economy and the drag they're exerting on the real estate market, I'm feeling okay about what's going on here. But what you're not seeing and what has economists very, very worried is something that they think the Fed is still waiting to see. So people are getting more jobs and they are getting more of those, you know, more money for those jobs. What they're not yet seeing are companies bidding up people at all levels, right? They do at the very high levels maybe, but at all levels of the economy, you're not seeing companies pay up to poach other people, which is what is really going to need to happen to really see a big push and acceleration in personal income. That the economy is not seeing yet. So we're going to need to see a whole lot more from these trends and some more time for the effects to trickle into the housing market, but not a bad start. We'll have to see what ends up happening. One thought about retail sales, the retailers have now said that they're going to expect a slowdown or at least a slower growth of numbers for Christmas. And I think that's why we're actually starting to see Christmas out in October this year. You know, anytime retailers can push forward Christmas and make you buy today for something that's going to happen in October, not a good sign for the economy and not a good sign for what those retail sales numbers are probably going to look like. All right, let's move on to the rest of the show. This week, my guest is Dan Goldstein. He is the real estate and personal finance reporter for MarketWatch. He's got a couple of great scoops to share with us this week. First, there are some promising statistics from Zillow and the Fed on how homebuyers are actually financing their homes. Then we're going to discuss an important consumer tip on the so-called mortgage acceleration scams. Some of you may have heard of companies claiming to be able to save homeowners money on their mortgages by accelerating the payment schedules, for a modest fee, of course. But the catch is, you don't need their expertise at all, and in fact, you can get the same savings without paying that modest fee. Dan's going to fill us in on the latest news out of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, CFPB, on what's being done to protect consumers. After that, I'll answer a question from a potential home buyer looking to put together a down payment by selling off some stocks he owns. But he wants to be sure he's making a sound financial decision. I'm going to tell him what I think. To wrap it up, I'm going to spend a few minutes reminding everybody why it's so important to read through all your loan docs carefully. On the day of closing, before you sign them, you're definitely going to want to look again. But with TRID going into effect, you're going to get these documents 3 days before closing, and you certainly are going to need to act as soon as you get them. I think we're all guilty of scrolling to the bottom of an iTunes agreement and clicking accept, but when it comes from a mortgage loan, that's unacceptable. You simply can't afford to not pay attention. All right, that's the lineup for today's show. Let's get going. Today, Dan Goldstein is back to share another important consumer protection tip. He's the real estate and personal finance reporter for MarketWatch, and I hope everyone has checked what type of smoke alarms they have and childproofed their televisions and stoves after our last conversation on protecting yourself from hidden dangers in your home. Since then, Dan's been following a story on companies that claim to be able to save you money on your mortgages through a technique called mortgage acceleration. But they're scams, or they could be scams. Dan's been reporting on what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is doing to stop unwitting consumers from falling prey to them. But first, I want to ask about a story that he wrote on a promising trend in the housing market industry, housing finance industry, that you won't hear about from any other banks. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, Bank of Mom and Dad. This is the place of first resort in some cases, particularly for millennials who may not have the amount of credit that they need to be able to get a regular mortgage, or they don't make enough income. Bank of Mom and Dad have stepped up historically, but what's going on with that now?
Well, the good news is, especially for all buyers across the board, maybe not for first-time home buyers, but the number of home buyers and home seekers who are looking for help from the Bank of Mom and Dad is declining. And that's actually a good thing, is that they're lending less money. And at the peak of the housing trough, or the bottom of it, as it were, nearly one out of four housing transactions had some form of gift from a family member. And now, according to the Federal Reserve, that's down to 12%. And that's pretty close to where it was before the crash.
So that would mean that credit has become more available, I would say, to millennials and to other people buying and selling homes?
Well, probably, and as we've seen, as more people have jobs and are able to build a little bit more of a nest egg, they've really been able to take these things for themselves. And one of the things that was very clear during the recession is millennials really took the brunt of it. They didn't have the jobs, they didn't have the credit. They were crushed by student debt. They didn't have enough money, either in income or job earning power, to sock away money. So the baby boom generation that probably made up most of their moms and dads did a heck of a lot better in the recovery, because the stock market recovered so much, more than 50% since 2009. And their homes did well, too. So they really were the source in a lot of cases for just that extra income that you might need for a down payment.
It's good to know. It's good to know we're making some progress somewhere in the housing industry. Now, about mortgage acceleration scams. In May, the CFPB brought a suit that you reported on against Ohio-based Nationwide Biweekly Administration, Inc. and Loan Payment Administration, Inc. Both were owned by a guy named Daniel Lipsky. There's other actions that the CFPB has taken, and what the CFPB has been saying is that companies misrepresented themselves to more than 100,000 consumers about the mortgage benefits of using their interest minimizers. So I've been writing about biweekly mortgages for a really long time and about how you don't actually need to pay somebody to do this for you. But this seems to have gone a step beyond. So tell us a little bit about what you found when you were doing your research.
Yeah, and this is really, the CFPB is really coming down on some of these companies that promise to make your payments for you ahead of time. And they're not just doing it, say, for mortgage, but they're doing it for credit card balances, et cetera. But really, just like you said, the only thing you need, you don't need a $1,000 mortgage accelerator. You just need an extra stamp. And what really the CFPB is going after is a lot of these companies that are promising mortgage acceleration by saying, well, we'll need one payment in advance and then we'll do this every month for you. And the reality is that you can set this up with your bank yourself, either directly, or the other thing you can simply do is just calculate 1 month's extra payment over 12 months and simply add it. So you're making that 13 month payment. But these companies are taking advantage of people, and there's no question about it.
So the CFPB said that the companies that they had been investigating were lying to consumers. So telemarketers would call you on the phone. They'd get a homeowner who has a mortgage, and they would say to them, we can save you thousands of dollars a year, and most banks won't let you do this on your own. You have to use us. And that was a complete lie, right?
Absolutely, because most banks will do this, and they're certainly happy to have this because they're getting their money faster. And it simply means that, you know, you're a better credit risk in that case because you're paying it down faster. And the other things too is that, you know, like I said, you don't need a $1,000 debit to do this from the mortgage company. All you need is an extra stamp or just being smart enough to make it every 2 weeks. Now, what the companies obviously said was, well, we know that, but you're going to forget. And most people who try to stick to a plan, they said forgot. But the thing is in reality, the CFPB was absolutely right. You really don't need this. You don't need a company to tell you when to pay a bill.
And what were the fees that people were charging for this? I know that typically you see stuff for $350, $450. That's a lot of money to be spending. You'd be better off taking that $450, making another prepayment. But some of these programs, I think, were charging even more than that, right?
That's right. I mean, they were charging up to $900 or even $1,000 or close to it.
Wow.
Just for the privilege of basically sending your money to the bank. And in some cases, the CFPB came down on them because they really weren't. They were just simply holding it in escrow and then making the typical two payments. So that was a complete fraud.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. Well, thank you so much for bringing it to everybody's attention again. We'll have the link to that story. I think you ran a bunch of stories. Is that right?
Yeah, we did. And if I can say, I think the best thing to do is people, if they want to pay their mortgage down early, the best thing to do is to simply take that 13th month of payment and spread it across the 12 months, and then you don't have to worry about it. You make that payment every month, and you're paying the equivalent of a 13-month payment without even having to think about it.
I agree completely. And the only other thing I would say is make sure that you check off a box on your payment coupon that says to apply the rest towards the principal. One other thing you may want to do is write two checks out, one for the regular mortgage payment and one for the extra, and then on the check itself, designate that the check is going to prepay the balance of the loan. There are some banks out there that, for whatever reason, really don't want you doing that, and they make it really hard. So this is a great way for you to keep straight with your records, right?
Absolutely, and you can always check with your bank on how exactly to do that, and you're absolutely right, is make sure that you designated as a prepayment on principal. And, you know, if you do it online, you usually get that opportunity to check mark or do a drop down menu that says this is for principal only.
Yeah, which is terrific. Thanks, Dan, so much. That was really helpful. We appreciate
your
feedback. On today's episode, I'll answer a question from a 50-something divorcee who's looking to buy a house and wants to retire in the next 10 years. Here's his question. In order to afford a house payment, I'll need to look for a home in the $200,000 price range. I'd need to sell about $60,000 in stocks for the down payment in order to be able to afford the monthly mortgage payment. I have $300,000 in stocks and bonds and would liquidate some of those. Do you think I should sell off that amount of stocks to invest in real estate, which is effectively what this would be? Will it delay my retirement plans? I think owning a house is a really good idea. For most people in most situations. But the questions you have to ask yourself are, where do you want to live after you retire, and what kind of cash flow will you actually have? As long as you have enough money coming in to afford the mortgage payments and your other living expenses, your decision will come down to which investment is going to earn a better return. Now, if you take $60,000 and buy a house, and the house appreciates in value at 2% per year, which is just above the rate of inflation, historically what real estate does, you're doing better on that investment than if you earn 5% in the stock market. Why? Well, you're earning 2% on $200,000, which is about $4,000 in the first year. You get to keep the profits tax-free when you sell, up to $250,000 if you're single and $500,000 if you're married. And if you itemize on your federal income tax return, you write off the interest in real estate taxes you pay. All good. Now, if you earn 5% a year on your $60,000 in stocks, that's roughly $3,000 a year. When you sell the stock, assuming you've held the investment for at least a year, and it is not being held in a qualified retirement account, you'll pay a maximum of 20% in capital gains tax. Now, while the mortgage taxes, insurance, and upkeep will cost perhaps slightly more than you'll pay in rent, part of what you're doing is building up equity in your home with every mortgage payment. So in addition to your property appreciation, you're also adding to your savings. And, of course, you have to live somewhere. So it's not as if you could say the choice is buying or not buying. You're going to buy or rent or, I guess, live with your parents. But what you might want to do before you sell that stock is sit down with a fee-only financial planner to discuss your portfolio and its entirety and figure out which would be the best shares to sell. You can also work out how delayed, if at all, your retirement plans will be. I've got some advice for anyone who's about to close on a home. Carefully reading through your mortgage agreement is about more than checking that the rate is correct. When you sign a loan document, you're on the hook for everything in that document. And given that mortgages commonly last for 15 or 30 years, a big chunk of time, that could be a pretty painful mistake to make. I've yet to go through a closing where I didn't catch a typo, find a wrong number, or see an incorrect interest rate listed on the document somewhere. Now, while it's reasonable to hope that everything will be correct, you need to be prepared to look over the documents just in case it isn't. What's that old saying? Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And under TRID, you're going to get the chance to do that 3 days in advance of the closing. You're going to want to check to be sure you're getting the amount of money you agreed to and that your personal information is correct. Be certain that the interest rate is exactly what you agreed to. You might have to check, pull out your documentation to look at that. Bring any inconsistencies and wrong information to the attention of the lender ASAP. New documents may have to be drawn up, or the lender may try to get by on correction fluid, but either way, if it's a serious enough correction, you're going to need to restart, or the lender is going to insist on restarting that three-day period for you to relook at all the documents one more time. You want to make sure you walk away with copies of documents that are correct from your closing. Although the new TRID changes do allow borrowers 3 days to review lending documents before closing, there's a lot of us who won't do that and are going to put it off until the last minute. While lenders can and are supposed to get the loan figures to the closing agents now 7 days, 3 to 7 days in advance of the closing, it's still unclear about whether or not that's going to happen. And that can increase the potential for typos, other errors, wrong information to get all filed right into the documents. Now, in some cases, rather unscrupulous closing agents might try to slip something in or make other changes that you didn't agree to. Whatever the case, don't miss your chance to actually look for those errors and make sure that the documents you are going to sign are perfectly correct, right? If not, everything could be sent back to re-underwriting, and then the whole timetable starts again, and that'll delay the closing significantly. So here's the point. When you get the documents, 3 days, at least 3 days before the closing, make sure you read and reread them. Check twice, sign once, so that you know that everything you're signing is exactly the way it's supposed to be. I hope you enjoyed today's episode on mortgage acceleration and what you can do to actually make a smart move there. Big thank you to Dan Goldstein from MarketWatch for being on the show. If there was anything you missed, don't worry. You can find the show notes at thinklink.com, thinklink.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes if you haven't already, and give us a rating or a review while you're there. You can also check out my other podcast, Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrne, for some extra marketing, PR, and social media advice. In our most recent episode, which should be up this week, John and I talk about a company in Chicago that has eliminated their entire marketing department, including the CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, just 6 weeks before Christmas. Go figure, right? And you can find that on Monday Morning Marketing. Also, check out my latest website, EliseGlink.com. If you want to hire me to give a speech at one of your events, that's the place to go, ILYCEGLINK.com. And now we're at the end of another episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink. I'll be back with another new episode soon. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.